I want to introduce you to a young mom. Her name is Angela. She's 21 years old, and she lives with her son in a two-bedroom Section 8 apartment. They live just outside Detroit in a city called Highland Park.
I have one kid.
Hello?
And one on the way. I'm going to say his name. His name is Darian. He's 3 years old.
Darian has a crazy amount of energy.
I know I'm going to have to put him on football or something.
He likes to bounce around his two-bedroom apartment like the springiest frog you've ever seen. He's also a very big fan of toy cars.
I'm playing my toy.
And soon, his mom tells me, Darian is going to be a big brother.
I'm pregnant now, and I'm 4 months. And I find out what I'm having today. I'm very, very excited. I pray it's a girl. I wonder how she's going to be.
Her attitude.
When you're pregnant, and you just imagine a lot of stuff. You imagine holding your baby. You have dreams about your baby. Because I had dreams about my baby. I had imaginer. I imagine a lot.
But no one imagines that their baby won't make it to their first birthday. Infant mortality is a big problem in Michigan. The ugly truth is, too many babies in Michigan are dying, and too many of those babies are children of color. I'm Jennifer Guerra with Michigan Radio's State of Opportunity. On today's show, we'll dig into the state's infant mortality problem and see what's being done to improve the health of all babies. Infant health is impacted by so many different factors: the health of the mother, access to healthy foods, safe environments. So what does it say about us that our infant mortality rate is one of the highest in the country? For every 1,000 babies born in Michigan, roughly 7 won't make it to their first birthday. That's a whole point higher than the U.S. infant mortality rate. When you break it down by race, the numbers are even more disturbing.
Actually, I gave birth in here. I went into labor in this room.
I met Shantania Smith on a hot summer day in August. She invited me over to her mom's house in Romulus near the airport. That's where she was babysitting her little brother, 2 cousins, and a niece.
Yes, 4 of them upstairs. They in the game room right now, so they'd be up there for it. They don't go come back down today once more popsicles.
Shantania is a shy, pretty girl, a junior at Eastern Michigan University. She's 20 years old, but she looks a lot younger. The bright yellow and green checkered sundress she's wearing makes her look more like she's 14. Which is how old she was when she met her boyfriend, Jerome. Shantania tells me they met in high school.
And then once we met in class, he had walked me to my bus, and we discovered we was getting on the same bus and off at the same stop.
They started dating almost immediately. 3 years later, when Shantania was a senior in high school, she got pregnant. When she found out, she enrolled in Medicaid. She took her prenatal vitamins, stayed in school. But 6 months into her pregnancy, her doctors discovered she had a short cervix. When she went into labor a month and a half later, the umbilical cord prolapsed and came out first, and Shantania was rushed to the hospital for an emergency C-section. On January 14th, 2010, she gave birth to a little baby boy named Jerome, JJ for short.
I actually just found out recently, I didn't even know this, that when my son was first born, they had to resuscitate him because he wasn't breathing when he was born. And he stayed in the hospital for, I think, maybe 6 weeks, and he came home, but he wasn't doing good, so I took him back to the hospital. So he stayed in for another week and came back when he was 8 weeks, and he ended up passing 2 weeks later.
JJ is among the 817 babies in Michigan who passed away in 2010. Today, there's a framed poster-sized picture of JJ hanging on the wall at Shantania's mom's house. And Shantania wears his ashes in a locket around her neck.
I talk to him a lot, almost on a daily basis. Sometimes a couple times a day, depending on what I'm going through that day.
What do you guys talk about?
Some of everything. Whatever's going on that day, whatever is on my mind.
She has lots to talk with him about. like how she got a raise at work and went from making $8 an hour to $9 an hour. But that dollar raise put her just over the threshold for Medicaid, so she was cut off from insurance. Without insurance, she couldn't afford her birth control. And now she and Jerome are expecting again.
I'm kind of happy, but I don't know. I'm scared most of all. Well, my son, when he passed away here in the bed with us. So it's just like, I'm scared to go through all of that all over, the whole thing. So it's hard. It's really hard to deal with. Because it's like I have so many people. I have a huge support system, but sometimes I really feel like I have nobody because I don't like to bring the pain back up in them. I don't like to see them cry as well. And I know if I bring it up, they're going to. So it's extremely hard. And it's been over 2 years and has not got better at all. So I never understood this thing. And, you know, all things heal with time because it doesn't feel any better at all. Not even a little bit.
In Michigan, how likely you are to survive your first year often depends on the color of your skin. Native American, Hispanic, and to a lesser degree, Arabic babies born in Michigan have a higher rate of infant death. But by far, the biggest disparity is between black and white babies. African American babies, like JJ, are 2.5 times more likely to die before they turn one compared to white babies. In some Michigan cities, the disparity is even higher. In Battle Creek, for example, black babies are 5 times more likely to die than white infants in that city. In Kalamazoo, the gap is even wider. That's not to say the infant mortality rate in Michigan and the U.S. hasn't seen dramatic improvement over the past century. It has. The infant mortality rate in the U.S. has steadily dropped over the last couple decades. But compared to other countries, we're still not doing that well. Infants born in Cuba and Slovenia have a better chance of survival than babies born in the United States. One of the leading causes of infant mortality in the U.S. is preterm birth. And if you're like Shantania Smith and you have a short cervix, you are at a much higher risk for delivering early, which can lead to a whole host of issues for the baby, including growth and respiratory problems. But what if there was a way to delay women from having their baby too early? I met up with Dr. Sonia Hassan at Hutzel Hospital in Detroit at a place called
the Center for Advanced Obstetrical Care and Research at the Perinatology Research Branch.
Hassan is the medical director there. She also does a lot of research involving babies and pregnant moms. She recently helped spearhead a worldwide study involving more than 400 pregnant women and a particular type of gel called vaginal progesterone. All the women in the study were monitored very closely during their pregnancies, and they all received a vaginal ultrasound to see if they had a short cervix. Half of the women with a short cervix got a placebo. The other half got the gel.
Comparing those two, we found that the women who got the progesterone had a reduction in the rate of preterm birth of about 45%.
In other words, almost half of the women who used the progesterone gel did not deliver early. The gel cut the amount of preterm births by 45%.
They also had a reduction in the rate of respiratory distress syndrome, so like that's the most common complication you can have in a premature baby. So that was significant too.
Hassan admits when she got back the results, she was kind of stunned. She didn't expect the gel to have that big an impact. And here's another thing. Not delivering early saves money. Hassan says if health providers screened 100,000 women a year to see if they had a short cervix during pregnancy and then gave those women the progesterone gel, those screenings would dramatically reduce healthcare costs.
So, for example, in the state of Michigan, we have 100,000 women who are pregnant every year. If we were to use that for all pregnant women in Michigan, we would save $19 million a year.
You mean because a preterm baby is going to have more health problems down the road or even right at the start?
Right, exactly. Right, and all of the problems that happen in the hospital and then afterwards are factored in.
getting a transvaginal ultrasound to check your cervix is not standard protocol, and not all insurance companies cover it. But they're starting to. Here in Michigan, cervical screening will become standard for all pregnant women in their second trimester, and moms found to be at high risk will get the progesterone gel. But the gel is just one piece of the puzzle. Michigan's infant mortality rate is such a big problem that Governor Rick Snyder even included it on his dashboard of things he wants to address in his first term. And so this summer, the powers that be got together to come up with a plan to reduce Michigan's infant mortality rate. Olga Dazzo, the director of the Michigan Department of Community Health, introduced the plan at a news conference in Flint.
We have an important goal ahead of us, and we're going to need everyone's help to change the environment in Michigan so that our babies survive.
The plan Dazzo presented took a year to put together, and the process involved groups from across the state. The plan has 8 main strategies, including things like more progesterone treatments for high-risk moms, promote safe sleep positions for babies, better sex education for teens. The 8th strategy on the list is to look at the impact of community and the experience of racial minorities. The news conference to announce the plan was held at Hurley Medical Center in Flint. The location was picked because Hurley is one hospital that's already made some progress on reducing not only infant deaths, but also reducing the racial disparity in infant deaths. A doctor at Hurley named Larry Young said the efforts to reduce the racial disparity in birth outcomes go far beyond the hospital walls.
I see infant mortality as a community disease, as well as a medical disorder. Too often we focus on the medical aspect and not the community aspect.
So exactly how does community play a role in reducing infant mortality? Well, I have 3 words for you.
The social determinants of health.
The social determinants of health
are those economic, social, contextual factors that influence a woman's ability to have a healthy pregnancy.
We'll unpack the social determinants of health in 10 minutes. You're listening to State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio.